You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right. All right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. At least that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I'm joined by one of our favorite guests, Little Egypt. She, of course, one of the original Glow Girls. It's great to have Little Egypt back on the program so we can discuss the recent Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, as well as the just-released Glow documentary, a fun look back at the history of that memorable program. Little Egypt, welcome to OWW Radio. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's always fun to talk to you, David. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it was nice seeing you recently in Las Vegas at the CAC reunion. It seemed like you and your fellow Glow Girls really enjoyed the reunion, especially the chance to reconnect with each other.
You know what? It's really the best forum for us to reconnect in because, one, we get to it's a great location, and through the CAC, Cauliflower Alley Club, we're able to piggyback our reunion with also supporting the, indie market, as well as getting a chance to reconnect with the old guys, which we absolutely love.
Well, several years ago, the CAC reunion served really as the official Glow reunion, at least your first public reunion in many years. Now this seems to have become a yearly tradition. I hope that continues.
We all do, and I can't see why it wouldn't, because even though some girls don't make it one year, they're looking forward to making it the next. And we have been really excited since Lisa Moretta got inducted, who worked as Tina Ferrari with Ashley and then went on to a great career with the WWE as Ivory. She, after winning the Female Legend Award, made the commitment to be a strong supporter of the CAC. And she sees this as her one opportunity to get out of her small, reclusive area and connect with the girls at the same time being here to support the young workers. She sees a lot of value in that.
Well, the CAC has done a pretty nice job the last couple years really recognizing the impact of female wrestlers. I mean, they've presented awards to Rockin' Robin, Judy Martin, Wendy Richter, and of course, as you mentioned, Lisa Moretti. And the fact that she was a Glow Girl, got recognized by the CAC, that has to have been a very proud moment for her and for all of you.
You know what? It really was, because what Tina, or I call her Tina, but I know she goes by Lisa and Ivory as well, what she represents for us and our and the Glow Girls is that that although we didn't go on to have great careers, that didn't mean we didn't get bit by the bug and thought of ourselves as wrestlers and wanted to work as wrestlers, because after Glow, after season two, the majority of the cast went on with David McClain to the POW promotion. So we were very serious about our craft. And we were lucky enough that we were on TV, that it was a kind of a funny hee-haw-like gimmick. Doesn't mean that we weren't taking real bumps out there and that we didn't love it. So for the CAC to recognize us and put us in our own little class of workers, I feel really honored about that, and I feel like it's about time. And I'm so happy, because if the CAC didn't step up, who would have, David? Who would have?
Does it surprise you that all these years later, you have such a strong bond, that the bond is still there for all of you? It's really special to see.
Well, and I'm glad you got to see it. We kind of dubbed you our official chaperone for many of those like late night outings, and we had such a great time with you and Jason.
Yeah.
And you did get to see the bond that we share, that it wasn't just for a documentary, that we didn't just get together one time, that when we found out one of our girls felt alone, Mount Fiji, I'm talking about Mount Fiji in the documentary, and you could see that she gave a really, heartfelt testimonial, and, she just felt so sad and alone, that we came together for her, and then now we have been a support group for each other. We've reconnected. We're not going to lose those bonds that we reestablished. And for the girls that were in, let's say, season one and two, meeting the girls from season three and four, we just feel like it's all the same sisterhood. It's the same sorority. We've shared the same stories. We just didn't get to work with each other. So we feel very connected to each other, and I love that.
You deserve a lot of credit. I love the story of how difficult it was for you to actually locate a lot of the other Glow Girls as you were trying to call them and get in touch, notifying them of the reunion at the CAC 2 years ago. Share with us again how difficult and why it was difficult for you.
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, you have to understand that 20 years ago when the show ended, it just ended kaput. It was gone.
Mm-hmm.
There were no ways for us to say, oh, my gosh, this is going to be our last match, and here, take my phone number so we don't lose touch. Take my address so we can stay in touch with each other. So that all just kind of fell apart, and it ended. So when we were working with each other, we always referred to each other by our character name. So in addition to not being able to find anyone, we didn't really know their names. You know, we had an idea. You know, we would get together, and okay, so wasn't it Lori? Was it this? Was it that? And one of them would know because they were closer to the person than the other, and so we would be able to find the names. And then I used social media by creating my own social media platform.
Mm-hmm.
On Facebook, it's Glow Little Egypt, or the official page of Little Egypt. And I used the fan base, David, to help find and track down, you know, the leads that I would follow up on. The fans were fantastic. Like, I would put a roster of names out on Facebook and say, these are the names of the girls that are missing. And then they'd use their detective skills, and then they'd throw me leads. And only I could really work the leads, because if a call came and said, hi, you don't know me, but, you know, they, you know, would scare half the girls off. So when I made the calls, yeah, really. So when I made the calls, it was like, oh, my God, it's you. And we connected, and some of the girls do not want to participate on open profiles. You know, they want to enjoy their quiet lives, but they connect with us. You know, we still have a strong connection with the girls that you don't see on Facebook. They're still very much involved in our sisterhood and our sorority, and we're all one big family.
Well, and you all came from such a diverse background that tracking down everybody, just on top of, like you said, you didn't know necessarily their real names, and it wasn't in the age of cell phones. It's a really remarkable thing. How many girls did you get back at the initial reunion 2 years ago? It was a large group.
Yeah, it was about 35, and that was those girls. Talk about, you know, the strong friendships that we had and what we wanted to present to Mount Fiji. All the girls knew was, hey, it's going to be here. This is what we know about Mount Fiji. This is what, you know, she's been in a nursing home for 5 years. We're doing a reunion. It's not going to be open to the public. And if you can make it, you've got to get here on your own. You know, we couldn't fly anyone out. We couldn't put anyone up. So they had to get there with their own resources, and they did. And it was beautiful, because what you're seeing on the documentary is the one organic, true, you know, sisterhood and reunion. When we have reunions now, there's fans, and, you know, we're not going to cry in public and stuff like that, because we've done that already. So it was just, you know, it's a beautiful thing when you look at the Glow documentary, which is, by the way, out on DVD now. All you have to do is go to Amazon or Google it, Glow, the Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. I'd say get it, because even though you can stream it right now on Logo TV, they cut about 14 minutes out for commercials. So you're kind of missing the flow of the documentary. So if you get the documentary, not only do you get to keep it, but there's 18 minutes of bonus features. So video that didn't make it to the documentary, you can still see. And a commentary reel that we cut with me, Queenie, and Hollywood, and Billy Corgan, we all got together and kind of talked over the entire documentary, so you can get kind of a better feel and a more intimate feel of what we were going through as wrestlers. So get it. It's only $24.99 and free shipping.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, last time we had you on the program, it was just about complete. The documentary was just about complete.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is really exciting time. It has been released, Glow, the Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. As you said, go to Amazon and pick up a copy. What specifically was your involvement in the project? You mentioned you did some work, some overlay with your commentary.
Mm-hmm.
What other parts of the project were you personally involved in?
Well, when I first got involved in the documentary, it was way early on. I got a call from Babe, the Farmer's Daughter, and she said, we had just connected because I I didn't even know Babe personally, and I just made the connection with her, and then she called me and said, hey, they're going to be doing a documentary. Do you want to come and give an interview? And she told me that Queenie and Hollywood were going to be there, and I hadn't seen them in 20 years. So absolutely, I got in my car. I drove from Las Vegas to Los Angeles. I gave an interview, and while I was giving the interview, the documentary guys told me, you know, who they had found, and it was just like a handful of girls. And our cast was huge. Over 4 years, we had close, if not more than 60 girls cast for characters in that four-year period.
Wow.
So I thought to myself, there's no way that this story, if this is the documentary that we're going to have, we have got to get girls from all four seasons. And, you know, Babe, who has the rights to Glow, was pretty much connected to some season three and four girls, but not really to any one and two girls. So I went on the manhunt because I really wanted to get their stories too for the doc guys. So I started helping them, which they really appreciated because it got a lot more interviews for them. It took the documentary, which normally takes about 6 months to make a documentary, to 2.5 years because that's how long it was taking me to find girls. It was not an easy process.
Oh.
I would have to send letters sometimes. I would have to, like, at that point, I was in real estate, so I had access to tax rolls, and I was like a detective going around to houses and stuff. It wasn't the easiest thing. It was not easy. But it was worth it. It was really worth it because we were able to put together a documentary that told our story, not just a handful of girls, but our story that we all own and that we've all gotten married to and that we all had, you know, a emotional tie to. And over the course of those 2.5 years, I became more and more involved in the documentary to the point where I was given a producer credit. So I got a coordinating producer credit on that film. So yay. So I got to see how it evolved and what they were editing out and what they were keeping. And it was so awesome because I knew that when it got released, it was going to be the most organic story of our sisterhood. Mm-hmm. And that's the way a documentary should be. And I did not know how it was going to play out. No one knew how it was going to play out. But that's how it evolved, as it should have been evolving that way, because that's what Glow is about. It's not about, for us, a campy fun show. It was about what we went through, what we were put in, our situation, how we, you know, formed alliances and sisterhoods to cope with what we were going through, and how much we love wrestling and how it took place in a wrestling world. So that's the Glow story. That's what I'm so proud of.
I remember from talking to you before, it seems like you're very happy with the way the film came out.
Oh my gosh. I am not only happy, I'm thrilled, because if you look at the reviews we got from really good sources, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, 5 out of 5 suplexes, we've had the LA Times. You know, we've had write-ups. If you go to my official page of Little Egypt or the Glow Little Egypt page, go to my notes section, I've kept a chronological list of all of the reviews. So you can actually go and see. I mean, Village Voice gave an unbelievable review on our documentary. Mm-hmm. And everyone who's looked at it, people that have been in the wrestling world, have loved it because they understood it. And the ones that weren't in the wrestling world, just someone who had no idea what Glow was even about or what wrestling is even about, understood what our story was, and they loved it. And I am so proud of that being our legacy, that it wasn't a choppy, quick, put a documentary together and let's sell some DVDs.
Right.
It was, and thanks to the guys who produced and directed this, which was Brad Thompson and Brett Whitcomb, who together, collectively, thought, no, we have a responsibility to make sure that this story, if it's going to be the only story of Glow, that we do everything possible to make it right, that we give these girls a chance to tell their stories, and let's just see how it evolves. And that's what they did. That's why it took 2.5 years. And it may be the only documentary ever done on Glow. I would be so pleased with that end result. I don't look back and have any regrets in regards to this documentary.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about the marketing and promotion of the film. I mean, there were some premieres in California. Is that right?
Oh, my gosh, David. We went on the film festival circuit for almost a year and a half. Mm. We picked up Audience Choice Awards. We picked up Film Festival Awards. We even picked up Best Documentary in San Diego Comic-Con 2012. How's that?
Wow.
How is that? Yeah. Yeah, so this little, it's like the little engine that could, did. And our story, this little GLOW documentary, has really done so well in the film festival market that we got a television premiere out of it. And we did premiere on network television, on Logo TV, during their What Documentary segment. And it aired for maybe 4 or 5 times in the month of March. So what a great chance to expose this documentary to people who may not be interested in wrestling, but are very interested in stories and sisterhood stories and coming together stories.
Right. Well, I own a copy of the film. I thought it was fantastic, and you can all be very proud of it, that's for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. We are very proud of it.
You know, there's no doubt that the GLOW girls have now become kind of a featured attraction at the yearly Cauliflower Alley Club reunion for the fans that come there. And my question, Little Egypt, is why do you think your popularity has endured with the fans the way it has?
Well, that's a really good question, because I'm still amazed at just how much our legacy has endured with the fan base that's out there. Especially knowing that after GLOW ended and after 4 years, it had a syndicated run an additional 12 years overseas, like countries like Peru and, all over South America, Brazil and Japan and Germany, and all these people had their kids growing up watching this crazy little hee-haw wrestling show, and it was so impacting for them because it brings back for them these great childhood memories. When I look back at what it was like to grow up when you're 12 or 13 years old, you know, and you think about what you were watching, that makes an impact on you, and you have a chance to share and engage and fall in love with GLOW all over again. I think that's what's happening. I think that GLOW was always there for them, but they have a chance to fall in love with it again, and we love that. We're so excited about trying different things at the Cauliflower Alley Club to not only lend our support and do whatever we can to be role models for the young girls out there, but we also want to make sure that, you know, we can be, I don't know, a good draw, because we know that's important too for the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Well, I think you're also an influence on a lot of the women's wrestling promotions that are out there today. There's quite a few: Shimmer, Shine, Women's Superstars, Uncensored, among others. What influence do you think GLOW has had on these current women's promotions?
Well, first of all, I'm ecstatic about it. And I think it's, you know, I look at it and I go, what took you so long to figure that out? Like the WWE has a new reality show called WWE Divas, and it's going to be about a handful of their divas along with some young rookies coming up through the, whatever, their league, their farm teams. And it's going to be kind of like their story, which finally they're realizing that females in this industry are viable, that you can make money off the females. And that's been the biggest point of contention, is that as the females start coming up in these bigger promotions and they start doing well, they get shut down. And I don't know why, because there's money to be made in the female divisions. And when I was at the Cauliflower Alley Club this year, you guys had the live wrestling event. Went on for 4.5 hours. And I sat there with Lisa Moretti, Ashley, Sunny, Roxy was there, Thunderbolt was there, and we watched these girls come out and perform. And it's the girls that stole the show, David. The girls are the ones that got the audience engaged. We got to see Melissa and Shelley. We got to see like a 6-person tag team event. We got to see these young workers coming in from Canada. And we were so impressed with the quality of their wrestling. But this is what we're seeing in the indies. Oh my gosh, why isn't more time and energy put into putting these girls forward? But I have to say, I am very pleased with promotions like WOW, like Shimmer, that are giving, and like Resistance Pro, that are giving these girls a chance to step up and show what they've got.
The women's matches at the Cauliflower Alley Show, the Casino Royale 2013, they got a great reaction from the crowd.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
They got a great reaction from us, too. I was sitting next to Lisa going, oh, my God, this is incredible, you know, and she's pointing out, like, the work. She's like, oh, my God, that girl's got it. She's got game, you know, and we're watching these girls, and I'm thinking, give these girls a chance. Somebody put them in a position where they can succeed outside of the indie so that they have a chance to stay in the business longer so that they can create a career and a brand for themselves so that they can stay longer and have some type of staying power. So that was my whole thing with the females. They were coming up to me during the event, and I was so pleased. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't believe how these girls were happy to talk to us, you know, that, mm-hmm. that they do think of us as role models, but they wanted to know what we felt and thought about them. And, you know, they wanted pictures with us. And it was so darn cute because we're looking at them going, no way, we want pictures with you. You're fantastic. You know, they're just adorable. And I'm just so glad that now it's not just the big promotions like TNA and WWE that are starting to tap into that female market, but the other promotions that are doing really, really well in the indies are realizing that there's money to be made in the women's division, and so more and more girls are getting opportunities, and that's all I can ask for. I am so happy with that.
The real shame is that people look at WWE as kind of the only show in town, and it's clear that they don't want their girls taking up too much of their television time. And there are some tremendous women's wrestlers who have passed through WWE in the past 10 years, and they're just not given the television time to develop a character and to really show the kind of wrestling that they can do. So these other avenues have become critical for the future of women's wrestling.
You're so right. You are so right. Like, I'll look at Shelly Martinez, who used to work for WWE and TNA, and I'm thinking, wow, this is, you know, if it wasn't for these other promotions, she wouldn't be working right now.
That's right. That's right. You know, we've had you on the show before, and maybe some people know your story, maybe some people don't, but Little Egypt, how did you find out that they were going to do a show called GLOW? How did you end up auditioning and deciding that you were going to give this a shot?
Well, I was 19 years old living in Las Vegas, and I was folding T-shirts at a T-shirt store, and Mount Fuji and Olympia came in to have a T-shirt made for a match. And anyone who's ever seen Mount Fuji or had a chance to hear her speak, she's a very dynamic, charismatic person, and she has a great energy around her. Even in a nursing home, in a bed where she doesn't get up, she still has a lot of charisma that surrounds her. And when she came in, I was just mesmerized by her size, and I couldn't stop talking to her, and she encouraged me to try out, and I knew I couldn't do it, but she convinced me that there were other smaller girls. At that point, she had tagged with Little Fiji, so she knew smaller girls could do it, and she said, just come down and talk to David. And I did, and I went into training, and they were really short on girls. So 2 weeks into my training, I was in my first match on live on television, which I was that's unheard of in the wrestling industry. You just don't take someone, teach them for 2 weeks, and then put them on air. It just doesn't happen. So the Little Egypt story is one of evolution, where you can actually watch her in her earlier matches evolve in her training towards the end, where I thought, you know, I was really defining my character, building my storylines, and able to do more difficult moves. So I think it's a good example of how a woman can get into wrestling and evolve. And that's my story now, being that it was Mount Fuji, I have a special connection to her for that.
Sure.
And one of the reasons I was so passionate about making sure that we had as many girls as we could possibly get to that reunion, because I just wanted it to be so memorable for her. And we all did. We all did. It's such a beautiful story. And now I know she gets a lot more visitors now. Whenever there's a Glow Girl in the area, they stop by and visit. So she doesn't sit alone. You know, she does have a lot of lonely moments, but she's not there all by herself all the time, feeling left out. She now feels like she's part of our sisterhood. Well, if we can't get there, we'll call her. And so if that was the end result and that's all we got from the GLOW documentary and everything else that happened, that was the best thing that could have happened for her and for all of us.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. One of the things that people, of course, remember about GLOW was the mixture of comedy and sketch work and music along with the wrestling. For you personally, what was more difficult, the wrestling or some of the other types of entertaining you were required to do?
Oh, no, it was the wrestling. It was the wrestling because we all wanted to do the skit work. That was like the fun stuff. Yeah,
okay.
That's where we could actually demonstrate our characters. And one of the things that I don't understand is why don't these bigger promotions put more time into these like backstory promotions, which where you can really define a character before they get into a ring. So for us, when we were doing these skits, it was like, you know, we could talk, we could show our personality. When you're in a ring and you kind of know how it's going to end, and it's, you know, you're limited, you don't have the same impact you would. So we love the skits, the raps. We love that we all have our own raps, and how many girls have a rap, you know? It just doesn't happen. So for us, that was it. The wrestling was for me the hard part because I didn't come from wrestling, but then hardly any of the girls did. At that point, it was just Queenie, and we were all kind of learning as we were going.
By the way, how did you officially become Little Egypt? Was it, you know, someone took a look at you and said you kind of look, you have, you know, the dark hair and, you know, your eye color and that kind of stuff, or did you have some input into your character?
No, actually, I didn't really have input into my character. They knew prior to me even showing up to train that they wanted to fill a role. They had this vision of a Little Egypt character that would enter the ring belly dancing. And they had a girl kind of pre-selected for that, but she went off to do some, I don't know if she was a dancer in a Michael Jackson show. So she went off on tour. And so they still had this vision. And then I came along. And Steve, who was the writer of the show, saw me in training, and he went to Matt, who was our director, and said, "We've got our Little Egypt." And they didn't really say, you know, what do you want to be? They said, "You're Little Egypt, and you're going to be named after this belly dancer from the late 1800s, and she set the world on fire, and so you're going to have this Egyptian character." And I felt comfortable with that because half of my nationality is Turkish, which is Middle Eastern, so I kind of was raised in that culture. So I felt really comfortable. I actually did not want to be Egyptian. I wanted to be like some Italian street thug. Because everyone wanted to be a bad girl, because if you were a bad girl, you got to cheat, you got to get away with stuff. You could do whatever you wanted. A good girl had to take it, had to follow the rules, and try to still be just as entertaining. So it was much harder for a good girl to pull off a good show than it was for a bad girl. So I wanted to be a bad girl. It didn't happen, but it was okay. I was evolving into my character, and I made the most of it.
You hear that a lot, that playing heel is more fun.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, your career was cut short because of a knee injury, correct?
Yes, it was, and not because of another wrestler. There was a separation in the mat during match day, and I was a barefooted wrestler, so my heel caught in this little separation as I was going in for a headbutt, which is like the silliest move. I mean, how do you get hurt on a headbutt? That's my legacy. That's what I have to live with now. Like, I didn't lose it jumping off the third rope into the crowd, and you know, nothing like that.
Right, like Mick Foley off the top of a steel cage or something.
Right. No. Mine, I go out on a headbutt, and I don't even make contact with anybody. I go down on my own. It's just the silliest way to go out. But that's going to be my legacy. And I tore my ACL, and then it was done. I tried to manage, but you could see the writing on the wall. There was nothing for women 20 years ago. I couldn't really do anything else. There was no other show like Blow that I could go to. No one, you know, I knew that my clock was ticking, so I just let that part of me go. I turned my back on wrestling for 20 years. I couldn't watch it, and that's not uncommon in this industry, and I know that you've probably talked to other wrestlers that when their time is up and they kind of put it behind them, in order to be successful somewhere else, you have to shut that door.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't watch it and go, why aren't I there? You know, why can't I do that? And it's just the energy that you don't want around you in order to be successful. So I actually closed the door on that until it was time to give an interview for the documentary. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, we do have value. We do represent something. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started doing those seminars at the Cauliflower Alley Club. Because I thought, you know what? I've got some skills. I've been in business for 20 years.
We'll talk about the seminars here in a minute. I wanted to ask you, though, do you think, for example, I had my ACL reconstructed a few years ago, and the surgery is so much better. Do you think if you had the medical advances back then that you would have tried to continue your wrestling career?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But I was really pretty much afraid of it at that time because 20 years ago there was like knee construction surgery. And I thought, oh, my God. And what they were telling me they had to do, I thought, you know what? I'm going to wait. I really honestly said that to myself. I said, I'm going to wait since I can use my leg. As long as as long as I'm careful on it, maybe medicine will advance, which it did. But by the time it did, 15 to 20 years later, I thought, well, you know, I've lived with it this long. I'm not going to be a athlete. So I don't think I'm going to do anything about it. And I haven't. I just have to be careful. I just can't play tennis or ski or do anything really crazy with any lateral movements or, you know, Dancing with the Stars is out, David.
Never say never.
Can you imagine?
And you have lived a very full life after you left GLOW, and you said it was kind of difficult for you to watch wrestling, but fill us in on what you've been doing. You said you were in real estate, and you just, you know, wrote a cookbook. Mm-hmm. You're a pretty interesting woman.
Well, I just, I did. I went into real estate shortly after I got hurt. Like a year and a half after I got hurt, I was a licensed realtor, and I worked in real estate for 20 years as an independent contractor, as an investor. So I got really knowledgeable in business and contracts and sales and all my sales skills that I developed in order to create these transactions. And so I learned a lot. I learned a lot that way. And in my fun times, I had a passion for cooking and also helping bridge the gap between the Turkish and the American communities and creating awareness of the Turkish people and what they represent and what secular government is. And a lot of people don't even know what that word means. So I wanted to create an understanding that what Turkey represents to America and as a people and the way that they live as a society, an open, free society where they are more European than you would think. And so I just wanted to create that on my free time.
And the cookbook is called, I believe, The Great American Melting Pot. Is that correct?
Yeah. I also worked on two other cookbooks with, like, my favorite recipes and then more of I got the American book on American recipes that have these great stories attached to them, because what my passion was is to bridge this gap. I wanted to introduce the Turkish people to where we come from as Americans, because they'll see our movies and they'll see us eating chicken fried, but they're not going to understand where that came from or how that happened. So in my cookbook, there's these stories on how fried chicken originated from the 1600s when the Dutch came over and how they were flouring their meat and frying it in oil and, you know, through the whole immigration process. And it's a story of immigration and hope and cultures. And so I wanted to share that story with the Turkish people. So it was designed for that. And then on the same token, I was creating a Mediterranean cookbook with stories to also introduce the cuisine and the culture of the Turkish people over to the Americans so that they don't just think it's about grape leaves and baklava, that there's this huge culinary history that goes along with the Turkish culture that dates back 700 years. I can make a dish, literally, that dates back 700 years from their cuisine. So it's really neat how I was just kind of playing around with that just for funsies.
Yeah. Are those books on Amazon?
No, actually, I turned over the Great American Melting Pot to a publisher in Turkey, so I don't know how they go about marketing that. And then my Mediterranean one, I'm still developing, so I don't have that one done yet.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, now, you mentioned that the past few years you were one of the featured speakers, part of the CAC seminar series, and these seminars have really become a highlight at the reunion, because the reunion is entertainment and it's a lot of fun for everybody to get together, but it's also a really good learning experience for people in the industry. So for those who did not attend your seminars, Little Egypt, can you kind of give us a recap on what your seminars were about?
Well, I did seminars the last 2 years. I didn't do one this year. I hope to do one again, maybe for the 50th. I want to come out with something fun, social media related. But what I was looking at was, when I first got to the CAC, I was looking at all these young workers and I was thinking, gosh, you know, this is not a regulated industry. This is not an industry that really puts much effort into promotion for these indie workers. And they're not doing really, there's really no group or no core group to try and create like an industry standard. So my first seminar that I did was basically on Facebook. It was all about Facebook, because at that time Facebook had just launched and everyone was trying to get into it, and they didn't, you know, it was really about building character profiles and creating a brand and staying in character and how to use Facebook. So it was kind of like Facebook 101, which went over really big, especially with the old timers who, you know, saw it coming but didn't know what to do about it. So they felt more confident with their abilities to go on Facebook, and I still engage with them, and they're doing everything right, and I'm so proud of them. And then the next year I did I did a social media class, which we introduced not just Facebook, but the big social media giants like YouTube and LinkedIn and mm-hmm. Twitter, and how you can utilize all these to create and continue to self-promote. Because at this point, when promoters are looking for workers, you know, they're going to be using these forums, and they're going to be trying to find, like, who's got the biggest fan base because they want to sell tickets. So it was really about trying to educate the young workers on how to continue to build a brand. I did a question and answer segment after that seminar where Billy Corgan stepped up, and he kind of gave us his ideas on Twitter because he has a huge Twitter following, and he was mm-hmm. really supportive and answered questions for like a 45 minutes. And then the next seminar we did was a panel seminar, of which we had, you know, Rock Riddle, Al Burke, and Susie Spirit, who went on to become a huge entertainment attorney in Las Vegas. So talk about resources. Yeah, and so what happened was we did a question and answer panel with them, and Dr. Dave Reese was my co-host on that one, and it went off really well because what Susie gave us as far as information was invaluable about how to create a paper trail, what a red flag looks like, what a promoter could look like, what a predator could look like. And we went on and on about that and really gave everyone in the audience like some really good information. So that's been kind of where I'm passionate about. And I was talking to Lisa this year, and we were thinking, you know, how can we be more involved? What is our industry lacking? How can we participate at a high level where we can offer suggestions to the Cauliflower Alley Club? You know, how do we get in front of a director, mm-hmm. right? How do we how do we get their ear? Give them an interview, maybe. Did you get those little hints? Okay, so what about this, David? Okay, it would take nothing for the Cauliflower Alley Club. It would be absolutely no effort whatsoever for them to have an issue designation to promoters as well as wrestlers. So if someone goes through like an interview process, let's say they're a promoter and they do excellent work, like Howard Brody, for example, who's been in the business forever and he pays his workers and they respect him. You know, if he got, like, some type of a designation from the CAC, like CAC approved, okay, mm-hmm. and he's reaching out to a young worker who doesn't know him from Adam, and they see that he's recognized under the CAC as a credible person, then they'll be more apt to work with him. On the same token, Howard, who reaches out to young workers, will see that if there's a worker that has received a CAC designation for being, you know, honest and forthright, if they receive a designation, then Howard will know that they're going to show up on time, that they're not going to have an excuse. You know, so the workers are going to know they're going to get paid, and the promoters are going to know that they can rely on the worker. And it would actually cost nothing for the CAC to do that. All it would be is an interview process. You could set up a panel of volunteers to go through and issue designations. And that way, David, if for any reason something would go wrong, mm-hmm. let's say Howard goes off the deep end and didn't pay his workers,
right.
they can file a complaint and he can lose his designation.
Mm-hmm.
How hard is that? That's just basic.
It seems like you've given it thought.
Well, think about it. Think about it and see what you can do, because honestly think that something that small can change our industry.
You know, again, what I loved about these seminars is that they really help the industry grow and learn, and what you're talking about is another way that the industry can grow and learn. The Cauliflower Alley Club itself can grow and learn. I mean, so much
uh-huh.
is changing, as you mentioned, with Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn,
uh-huh.
and we all have to be aware of it, and we all have to change and grow.
We do, and we can all use, you know, whatever skills we bring to the table. We have these skills for a reason. This is, every industry that has value has some type of industry standard,
mm-hmm.
industry, the way it functions, you know, and this one doesn't. Wrestling does not. A predator can come in and mask himself as a promoter and do all sorts of damage and havoc, and it would just be something that our industry just got accustomed to. But why does it have to be that way? Why can't our industry set the standard? Why can't the Cauliflower Alley Club set the standard in wrestling? Therefore, the wrestlers that are, you know, applying for a designation, a CAC designation, regardless if they're a promoter or a wrestler, then therefore the Cauliflower Alley Club becomes more of a, you know, a reputable, which it is already, but a really, really unique and elite designation, and it's going to get more people to the Cauliflower Rally Club.
By the way, are your seminars and presentations available online at all? Can anyone go to like to a YouTube channel or, you know, because they're very valuable. And even for someone like myself, Little Egypt, who, you know, I'm not necessarily in the wrestling business, but I used a lot of what you said about LinkedIn to update my profile, and I use that in the defense industry.
Oh, that's so cool. You know what I did is I went back home because I did a 45-minute PowerPoint presentation. I went back home mm-hmm. and I recorded it and I talked over it like as if because everything was still fresh in my mind. So I recorded the entire class, and I posted it on YouTube, and I think it's called Social Media or Bust with Little Egypt. So you can just plug that in and take your 45-minute class and hear everything that went on at the Cauliflower Alley Club seminar.
Okay.
And with the Susie Spirit panel with Rock Riddle and Al Burke, we don't have the entire thing posted, but we have enough that you can get an idea of what transpired. So definitely you're not missing out on anything.
And that was on YouTube, correct?
Yep, on YouTube. Or you can go, again, to the official page of Little Egypt or Glow Little Egypt on Facebook and find those posted under, I've created a notes section called Little Egypt on YouTube. So boom, 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 you can just go and find it. I make it so easy.
You do. Well,
life doesn't have to be difficult.
Well, you mentioned that you and Billy Corrigan did a seminar together. And that's fantastic, but it was really interesting to hear the fact that you filmed a music video with him as well. Tell us about that experience.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So this is why the Cauliflower Alley is so instrumental in networking. This is a perfect example. So over the course of time, like Billy writes a song called Glow, I reach out to him, and we become buddies, Twitter buddies, and we get to know each other well, and I know that he's very interested in wrestling, and I thought, well, the Cauliflower Alley Club is happening at the same time he was planning on coming into Vegas, so I invited him out to it. He had a great time. He meets Melissa Anderson for the first time, right, with Jason, and we all kind of like go out and eat, and they, you know, he gets to see her, understands who she is as a worker, and then goes back home, comes up with the concept of putting together a music video that's wrestling-based that focuses on female workers and kind of the backstory of that. So what's really unique about that is if he didn't go to the Cauliflower Alley Club, Melissa wouldn't have had that opportunity to meet him
right.
at all. That's networking. That's how networking works. That's why you get to the Cauliflower Alley Club, because you don't know who you're going to meet and what it's going to lead into. When Billy asked me to be part of it, oh, my God, I was so excited because a 45-year-old woman doesn't go in music videos. They don't. You know, are you kidding? I'll be the coolest mom in my son's college. Nothing is going to top this. This is the best thing. So we did the music video, and he becomes more involved into wrestling. He creates Resistance Pro. He's an advocate mm-hmm. for female workers. He goes on to create a higher standard in Chicago for indie wrestling that if we looked at that as a prototype, we can turn, you know, we can collectively as a group implement some of those things that they are doing to make our industry better and safer. And these are, you know, this is what the Cauliflower Alley Club does. So, yes, I was in that music video. Yes, it was fantastic. And then Billy comes back the next year and is willing to talk at one of my seminars. So how cool is that? It's just a format for giving feedback and counsel to young workers, and we love doing it.
Now, you have been a wrestler, a real estate agent, an author. You've traveled all over the world and been able to balance work yes. and family. Looking back, Little Egypt, what are you most proud of in your career?
Well, what I'm really the most proud of is that I was able to work on my marriage for like 28 years. I've been happily married for 28 mm-hmm. years, and nothing is easy. And the fact that, you know, I have a husband that works as hard as I do in a relationship, I feel really lucky and blessed. And I feel blessed that I have a 20-year-old son who is on his way out the door, finally. And you know, I'm watching my son develop into a man. Those are obviously amazing things for me in my life as far as a career goes. What I'm really proud of is that I didn't get caught up in the hype, that I kept my nose to the grindstone. I worked my business as a business. I didn't get emotionally invested in anything that I was doing, from wrestling to real estate I never got invested. So I was able to understand time management, and if the most important thing is my family, how to maximize my time. And I became an artist at that over years. I was able to develop and streamline my business so that it functioned really well, so that I can put the minimum amount of energy to reap the maximum amount of benefits. And all this I just want to turn back and share with young people, and I hope to do that. I hope Bob asks me back for another class at the CAC. I would love to do it.
Absolutely. Before we let you go today, remind everybody again where they can find you on Twitter and Facebook.
Twitter, so easy. Little Egypt, done, at Little Egypt. Facebook, just put in Glow is my first name, Little Egypt is my second name. From there, you'll find everything, albums, notes. It's like a chronological history of Glow on the official page of Little Egypt, which is an open fan page. You're going to see albums that go back all the way to the beginning of Glow, and you'll be able to connect with the Glow Girls on my Facebook because I listed all of them that are available for you to just send out friend requests and follow. So if you're looking for a Glow Girl, come to my page first, take a look at what I've got listed, because that is the most recent up-to-date information as far as what's going on with Glow, when and where, and what we're doing. So stay in touch. Don't lose touch. We found each other, we found our fans, and we don't want to lose contact again. We're not going to have that mistake happen twice.
It's a great Facebook page, but I highly recommend that the listeners follow you on Twitter. I've told you before, I think you've got a wicked sense of humor. It's a great, great Twitter feed, so highly recommended.
Thank you, David. And for anyone that's listening to you, I also enjoy following your Twitter feed. I follow you on Facebook. You are so compassionate towards the females in this industry. You are a great spokesperson. We are so excited to have you in the Cauliflower Alley Club at a really high level. I mean, it's only going to be good for all of us that you've taken such an interest in what goes on in wrestling and what goes on with the females in our industry. So thank you, David. Thank you for this time, and let me know if there's anything else I can do for you.
You got it. Well, thank you, and thank you for joining me again on OWW Radio. Always enjoy the conversation, and best wishes, good luck with everything, especially the documentary Glow, the Story of the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, available now on Amazon.com. Little Egypt, great having you on the show today.
Great. You too, David. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now, don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thank you again to Little Egypt for joining today's edition of OWW Radio. Make sure you follow her on Twitter at Little Egypt and follow me as well at DLB19338. We hope you've enjoyed the program. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well, that's okay.